This is the Observations Podcast for Sunday, the 14th of January, 2024. Welcome to the podcast. Michael is not here yet. I did not get a message from him saying that he was not going to be here. However, at the moment, he is not. So we are going to go ahead and start off without him. And we'll see how things turn out without Michael being here. So I want to start off, and there is a lot to talk about. We have a wealth of stuff to discuss, and we are going to start off with what is going to happen tomorrow in Iowa. And in Iowa, we are going to have the caucus tomorrow. Notice that Michael's Zoom window is there. I'm going to go ahead and disable that until such time as Michael is able to join us, assuming that he does. If not, we'll just turn Zoom off and we'll continue running. So, recent poll of Nikki Haley supporters for the Iowa caucus. Now, look, this is a caucus, and it's not a primary election. It doesn't work like an election. You actually have to have, first of all, an entire evening free, because it is a fairly long and drawn-out process. So wherever you live in Iowa, you have to get in your car and you have to drive to your local caucus location. A lot of times it's a local, you know, high school gym or something like that. And you have to meet up there and you have to all gather together in a group and you have to listen to instructions. And then you begin to caucus. And the way that you caucus is that you just begin to divide the room into sections. And so you say, if you're going to vote for Donald Trump, go over here and stand over there. And if you're going to vote for Nikki Haley, go stand over there. And Vivek, stand over there, et cetera, et cetera. And so then everybody gathers. And then there follows this process of trying to convince people who are standing in one group to come over and join your group. And it's a long, drawn-out process. Ah, by the way, it looks like Michael is, in fact, here. So, hi, Michael.
Sorry for being late.
How are you doing?
Good.
So, anyway, I was just describing what the caucus process will be in Iowa. So, basically, you got to have, you know, 2 or 3 hours available on an evening to show up. It's not a deal where you just show up, you grab your ballot, you cast your vote, you shove it in an envelope and put it in the ballot box and walk out. You know, like a 20-minute deal. This is like a 2 or 3 hour thing where you might have multiple counts, and after each count, you try to convince people to come over and join your group. And it's complex. And that's how they choose the delegates in Iowa. It's weird, but that's how it works. And here's the thing. Anybody who shows up can caucus in Iowa, apparently. So there are a lot of people in Iowa who are supposedly Nikki Haley supporters. And here is how they say they would vote among Haley supporters. If she were to lose, if Donald Trump were to win the nomination, 43% of them would vote for Joe Biden. So are we talking about Republicans here who are just definitely anti-Trump? I don't know, but it's a weird thing to see that you have all these people who would vote for or who would caucus for Nikki Haley, and then if Trump won, would end up voting for Joe Biden. We don't know because the caucus hasn't been held, so we don't actually know what level of support Nikki Haley has. We won't know until tomorrow. And it will just depend on who is willing to go out in a blizzard and give up 3 hours of their evening to stand around in a high school gymnasium and stand in the section that has been cordoned off for Nikki Haley. So it's caucuses are
weird. A hardy bunch out there.
What?
So, I mean, they're a hardy bunch out there. those corn-fed Iowa boys. Well, they can handle a little snow.
You would have to be. My experience in living in that part of the country was largely
unpleasant. So you lived in Minot, didn't you?
Yes, Minot, North Dakota, which is actually worse, I suppose, than Iowa. But at that point, when you're talking about winter, the gradations of awful are so minor to anyone who lives in the more temperate part of the country that I'm not sure I would notice a big difference between Iowa and North Dakota. But it is bad. The weather is bad, and you have to want to go out in that weather and suffer a little inconvenience for the whole caucus process, which is why Iowa doesn't ever actually predict anything.
Well, yeah, that's true. I mean, it's been a while since the winner in Iowa actually went on to win the presidency. So,
you know, Ted Cruz won in Iowa in 2016.
That's right. Yeah, so it's not so much a bellwether, I don't think, at least not for Republicans.
But we treat it like it is. You know,
I don't know why that is, though. Because it's first, I guess?
Neither do. And by the way, it hasn't been a bellwether for either side for a long time. I mean, if Iowa determined who won the nomination, we'd have been talking about President Gephardt in the late 1980s, or early 1990s. That just never happened.
Yeah, and Bill Clinton hasn't really changed much.
Yeah, Bill Clinton didn't win Iowa.
No.
of course, there wasn't a, not like today, there wasn't a Super Tuesday back then.
Yeah, well, not the same as today, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there was what they called a Super Tuesday, where a couple of states had the elections on the same day. But it's not like now, where, 20 states have their primary on the same day. So, it wasn't until then that Bill Clinton began to pull ahead and then ultimately won the nomination. So, with caveat that Iowa doesn't predict anything, does it make any difference who wins tomorrow in terms of the shape of the overall nomination race?
I think the biggest difference it's going to make is in who hangs on. Already Chris Christie dropped out. I'm sure there'll be some other dropouts after they don't register at all in Iowa. So we're basically left with Nikki, Trump and DeSantis is what I expect. I think that's the biggest. Well, Vivek is probably going to keep going. I think that's the biggest thing is the paring down of the Republican field is probably the most likely outcome to come from that.
I don't know that Nikki Haley holds on after that. I mean, she would have to do well to hold on. Well, we'll see if she does. From what I see, it looks like Ron DeSantis is running a huge ground game in Iowa. And I think he has to. Here's the thing. Given the fact that Iowa's not a bellwether, it doesn't usually predict anything. What we have been seeing is Trump ahead. I think there was a poll yesterday or day before today that shows Trump was 73%. That seems like an insurmountable lead. Is that true? Well, we're going to know tomorrow.
Right.
And what does it do to the state of the nomination if DeSantis actually wins? Trump comes in at like 30% and he's neck and neck with DeSantis or Haley or whoever it might be, Vivek, somebody else. And I do note that Trump has been trying to torpedo, Vivek has been doing this thing of, Trump has all these problems. If you really want to continue Trump's policies, you got to vote for me. And Trump just savaged him on Truth Social yesterday. And all of the Trump people on social media just did a 180 degree about face on Vivek saying, oh yeah, he's just another deep stater, just like Nikki Haley. So, how much of that is politics? How much of that does Trump mean? You never can tell with him. But if Trump does not really get the 50% plus that everybody expects, what does that tell us?
Sure, yeah. I mean, I guess it gives us a clear picture of where the polls actually are, but I'm not sure it's going to be clear enough until probably September to really know what's going on.
Yeah, we see
And
all
it should be of likely voters too that we're polling, not.
not just everybody that we can talk to. Yeah, so I don't know how that's going on. So it's something we'll have to watch tomorrow. And if Trump ends up not winning, and not winning by a huge margin, I don't know what that means. And he didn't even really show up in Iowa until this weekend. So,
Well, and he's either going to complain about being rigged or how stupid caucuses are or some other thing to write it off as an anomaly, but
an anomaly.
he won't suffer losing well, I can tell you that.
No, well, he never has. Why would we expect him to this time?
You're right.
So it's just going to be something interesting to watch. But what I think outside of just the politics of that is looking at what is going on in Washington, D.C. in terms of what appears to be a preparation for a Trump nomination, and indeed fears of a Trump win. So there is a movement in Washington, D.C. now, as described by this MSNBC article, and one of the organizations that are really involved in this is Democracy Forward. And well, you can determine, they've taken the Trump administration to court more than 100 times, so you can determine as to how pro-Trump that organization is. They're trying to push for a change to the Insurrection Act, because that's what we're being told now, that America's commander-in-chief has vast powers at his disposal, one of which is the Insurrection Act. And it was sort of highlighted in one of the Trump trials, and at this point I don't remember exactly which one it was, where Judge Pan asked, when can we arrest the president? Let's say the president has a political opponent assassinated. Can we arrest him then? And the answer was, well, no, not unless you can impeach and convict him first. I don't know if that's true, because even though congressmen have some limited immunity when traveling to and from Congress, there's not much in the Constitution about the president and his level of immunity and what he can and can't do, and when he can be arrested and can't be arrested. I think the founding fathers assumed that someone who made it all the way to president would probably not be the sort of fellow who would need to be arrested. And that may have been an oversight on their part, human nature being what it is, and ch changing times being what it is. So I'm kind of curious. First of all, what do you think of that argument that, Trump can
I
have
think there's
people
some merit to
assassinated?
it. I mean, th there is a process for removing the president built into the Constitution. It's the only process built into the Constitution for removing the president. And it's also known through case law and opinion letters from the DOJ that after the president leaves office, he or she can then be subject to whatever crimes they may have committed in a court of criminal law, once they're out of the office. So I think there is some merit to it. I mean, I don't believe that's the way it's going to shake out, but
Well,
I don't think it's a completely loony argument.
interesting point. There are actually two mechanisms for removing the president, because we do, in fact, have the 25th Amendment.
Well, that's true, yeah.
So it is possible to remove a president without impeachment or conviction.
True. If you want to use the 25th Amendment.
Although the 25th Amendment was designed for some sort of more or less temporary disability, and the vice
Yeah,
president.
I guess, well, it kind of started with JFK, but then there, I guess, was the scare with Ronald Reagan and H.W. Bush and and who was it saying, oh, I'm in charge.
Yeah, well,
Haig, I think it was Alexander
actually,
Haig.
actually, it first started with Eisenhower when he had his heart attack as president.
Yeah, that's right.
And then, of course, JFK was shot. And so, anyway, the whole idea behind it was, okay, if the president is messed up, how do we transfer power? We're not going to have an impeachment trial. He didn't do anything wrong. He just is incapable of performing the duties. Now, can you pull a 25th Amendment on a president who says, I want Joe Biden assassinated, or Chuck
Yeah, I
Schumer,
mean,
or whoever it might be? Is that a mental disability that the vice president and a majority of the
it
cabinet can
is
tell
if the
Congress?
Congress says it is.
Well, yeah, it all comes down to what does Congress say it is. So there are two methods, but this whole idea is that Trump will somehow use the Insurrection Act and will call in the military to do something dictatorial. And by the way, this has gotten down into the military itself. Trump was saying he would send the military in to do some stuff, the border, this and that. So there's a lot of, there's a lot of concern about that. And at West Point and other U.S. military academies, they are now holding courses on their oath and their loyalty to the Constitution, vice obedience to the orders of the president.
I'm surprised they didn't always have this.
Actually, they always do. But they are now really emphasizing their loyalty must be focused on the nation's democratic underpinnings rather than on any individual. The problem with that is that we presume the orders we receive will be lawful. I mean, we do presume that our superiors in the military, all the way up to the president, will not issue illegal orders. And you have no duty to obey illegal orders. Of course, if you say, I'm not going to obey, this order is illegal, you will be court-martialed. You will have to defend that assertion in a court of law. And so, the invocation of the Insurrection Act really opens up a big can of worms for a president who wants to abuse it. And so, the assumption is that no president will abuse it, but we have this fear on the part of the left, and it's a very, very obvious fear that, and we hear it all the time. We've heard it from Chuck Schumer and all these other people on the Democratic side who are telling us if Donald Trump gets elected, it will be even Joe Biden is saying it. Donald Trump gets elected, it'll be the end of democracy. It'll put democracy in danger. Whoopi Goldberg the other day, he'll throw gays and stuff in prison, and you'll all be disappeared into camps.
Why didn't any of this happen the first time?
Well, that is the question, isn't it? The thing I'm getting at is that just in the articles that I've just shown you indicates that the national media are willing water carriers for the Democrats to at least put the seed in people's minds that it's too dangerous to vote for Donald Trump.
But
Because,
this is the same tack they took the first time as well.
yeah, exactly. Of course, the first time we had Russian collusion. He's Putin's puppet, right? And so now we're just taking that up a notch. He's like Adolf Hitler. And if he gets elected, it'll be the end of democracy. But he was already
Which,
president for 4 years and he didn't do any of that stuff.
no, if anything, he did the exact opposite of Joe Biden. He actually listened to the court's orders, even when some of them were blatantly unconstitutional. He abided by the injunctions from the Hawaii judges and everybody else.
And there were a couple of times where he said, I can't do this. This is a congressional thing.
Right. I mean, there was a lot of bad stuff he did too. It was not exactly a good time to for keeping the debt down for deficit hogs during the Trump years. But he did do a lot of good stuff too, and one of those things was actually following the law, and even to the point of strict adherence under our border laws and the CBP and how they're supposed to operate. All we did was enforce the law, and it drove the left nuts.
And whenever federal courts came in and said, no, you can't do that, we're just going to put in an injunction and prevent you, he obeyed the injunction. So, yep. I mean, he, whatever you might think about mean tweets or, you know, nearly unhinged public statements in terms of how he actually governed, he appears to have obeyed the law. Now, there are people who are coming out afterwards.
Yes, unlike Joe Biden.
Yeah, there are people who are coming out
afterwards.
Yeah,
unlike Joe Biden, who just said, screw you, Supreme Court. I can't do this and give money away? I'm just going to do it anyway.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't do that at the border? I'm going to do that anyway.
What we are hearing from some former Trump officials is that he wanted to do all kinds of illegal stuff. And they talked him out of it.
Yeah, okay. That's your job, is to talk about doing illegal stuff.
Well, maybe not talk about illegal stuff, but to explore the legal possibilities that are open to you. And I think Trump would say that was what I was doing. I was trying to figure out what the limits were, and we're having these conversations. And I would be willing to bet that every president has had that conversation with their staff.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you have to.
You know, can I send the military to do this? No, Mr. President, posse comitatus prevents it. And I believe the last time the Insurrection Act was used was after Katrina in 2004, where...
Yeah, it was declared an emergency zone.
Yeah, George W. Bush did that. And even that was kind of hard to do. I know Congress amended the Insurrection Act briefly to make it easier for the president to do what George W. Bush did after Katrina. But state governors got so pissy about it that they repealed that a bit later on. But there's all this fear. And I don't know where the fear is coming from. Because here... The weird thing is, Democrats seem to be eager to engage Trump in a national election. That seems to be the fight that they want to have. But all of the other things they're doing looks like they're afraid Trump would win such a contest. It doesn't make a lot of sense to me. There's a lot of intellectual inconsistency in those two positions.
Yeah, well, that's left. Not exactly known for their intellectual consistency. Well, and look, they think they do want to defeat Trump once and for all on the national stage, and they hope that that will kill the MAGA movement. But at the same time, they're worried he might win, and so they're trying to ferberize the government so that he can't monkey around with anything, and they keep their, you know, little hidey holes nice and safe.
Let me be clear. None of this will kill the MAGA movement.
Yeah, that's true.
Because the MAGA movement, while it currently is coalesced around Trump, is not dependent on Trump. Something we've talked about many times. Trump is not the problem. Trump is not the cause. Trump is the symptom. And it's the symptom of a political system that is broken and does not deliver the results that the American people want.
That's absolutely true.
Just yesterday, we basically had Mitch McConnell and what's his name? Langford in the House, Jim Langford, come up with a deal to basically keep the border open and provide, you know, all this extra government funding and just basically allow Joe Biden to allow as many illegals in as he wants. Those are Republicans, by the way. The people who are supposed to be against all of this. Neither the Republicans nor the Democrats, and by the way, we see this with 2/3 of the American public not wanting either Donald Trump or Joe Biden as their selection for president in 2024, we have a political system that has built up an entire edifice whose sole purpose is to get incumbent politicians reelected. And if that does anything good for the American people, it is purely incidental. It's nothing more than a system that is designed to keep the elites in what they consider elite status. And if you think defeating Donald Trump is going to kill the MAGA movement, you're a fool.
Because yeah, this really is not. It can be mistaken for, charismatic, strongman type of movement, but it's been growing and building since the early 2000s. I can remember when the Porkbusters movement started going, and then we had 2010 and the wave election, and then all these local elections with the Tea Party members, a lot of them ended up turning into scams, but there's people who feel passionately about that stuff. Fundamental things, the national budget, what we spend it on, all those things matter to people. And it's not just going to go away because you defeated one guy. There'll be somebody else. There'll always be somebody else.
And it may be someone that you prefer less than Donald Trump. But but look, it does have the hallmarks in some ways of a cult of personality, right?
Mm-hmm.
Donald Trump says X one day, and you look on social media, right? And Cat Turd repeats it on Twitter, or X, as it now styles itself. And then Donald Trump comes back and completely reverses what he says the next day, which is largely what he's done with Vivek Ramaswamy, where, Vivek was a great guy, and now Vivek is a poison on the Republic. And you can just watch, barking like trained seals, all of Trump's, supporters, Cat Turd, coming out and saying, yep, Vivek is a bad guy. Trump is right. Okay, I can see why you might think there is a cult of personality built up around Trump. And, maybe you're right. Maybe in some sense there is. But here's the thing. If Trump goes away, if Donald Trump has a massive heart attack and dies tomorrow, someone else will come along. Because the concern, this is not about Donald Trump. It's about a broken political system that no longer delivers to the American people what they want.
Now, yeah, that's exactly right.
There is a larger problem, which is that the American people now appear to want, depending on what side you're on, two completely opposing things, and that both sides cannot be satisfied with any political system outside of totalitarianism. And of course that would only, give one side what they wanted. We're too far apart on issues. We're too far apart culturally. The Donald Trump problem is not going to go away. Even if Joe Biden wins re-election and defeats Donald Trump with another 81 million votes. Okay, the MAGA movement is not going away. Because the MAGA movement, at the end of the day, is not about Donald Trump. Right now, Donald Trump is the vessel for that movement. And I don't even think Donald Trump realizes that. I think even Donald Trump thinks that this is somehow in some way about him. And that should not surprise us, because my assessment of his character is he tends to think that about everything. But if he goes away and he is no longer useful, he will be ignored. But this movement behind him is not going to go away. There is certainly on the right a desire to return to an America that may no longer exist. And I'm not sure that that is healthy, but it's not going away.
Yeah. It's just that there are so many people disaffected by both these. If you only look at party identification, you're not getting a full picture of what's actually going on there. There's a reason it's a populist movement. It's because parties no longer really represent what people want. They may say that, but that's not what they do, and people have recognized it.
And look, 2020 aside, and we can talk forever about how reliable that election was based on all of the changes that were made to election laws in various states, to allow a lot of people to vote who had not previously voted. I mean, look, when you're talking about a guy who has a greater percentage of the vote than Barack Obama had, in Joe Biden, who is largely a functionary, okay, you got to wonder about how reliable that election was. But, and look, the morning after that election, or not the morning after, but the very first podcast after the election in 2020, both of us said 81 million votes seems an unusually high number for Joe Biden. But, okay, fine. If Trump goes down, obviously he's never going to run again. He'll be far too old. Joe Biden is not going to make it through a second term, I don't think. It'll put things off for another 4 years, but then, assuming we make it to 2028, which is another thing I want to talk about, MAGA's not going to go away. They will latch on to somebody else. They will find another voice. And there are plenty of people out there, look, Vivek is one, who will jump on the America First train. Now, Nikki Haley won't, because Nikki Haley is an old school establishment Republican.
Yeah, she's more of a Rockefeller Republican. But, I mean, you certainly have DeSantis. You got Mike Lee out there. You still got Rand Paul and Ted Cruz. I mean, they're not shy about stepping onto the national stage. So, and, you know, it may not be called MAGA anymore, but it's whoever addresses those particular concerns and presents a realistic plan to attack those concerns, you've got yourself a new train.
You know, the warning shot across the bow to Democrats was 2016 when Donald Trump won Michigan and Wisconsin. Look, this was on the back of blue collar votes. It wasn't a big margin. It was a pretty small one, but blue collar votes are the votes. Oh, and by the way, sorry, Pennsylvania. Those blue collar votes were votes that the Democrats have thought they've had in their pocket since the 1930s.
And they did. I mean, I remember, I guess it was you and I watching the returns come in 2016. And the ones we were waiting for were all those Rust Belt states and the part, you know, the western part of Pennsylvania and, of course, Michigan and Ohio. And once we saw those going red, we rightly were like, well, we're going to see some surprises up north then.
And by the way, the Democratic argument against Donald Trump, you'll note, is not a policy argument. Something we talked about last week.
It's ad hominem.
It's all ad hominem. It's all he's Adolf Hitler just waiting. And sure, he didn't do it in his first 4 years, but when he comes back, he's going to do it. Which, by the way, all of the people who thwarted him or who betrayed him or what have you in his first 4 years, they still have their government jobs.
Yeah.
They're still there. They're not going to be any more cooperative now than they were from 2016 to 2020. So that's why we're hearing this. Well, he'll just impose the Insurrection Act. So he'll just send the military into the cities and there'll be tanks rolling down the streets. Really? I find that rather hard to believe.
Didn't he threaten Chicago or Seattle with that? One or the other. I think it was Chicago. And Lightfoot was like, no, you're not. You know, we don't need your help. Okay. Governor Pritzker was like, no. We don't need any of that. Okay. Burn.
Yeah, and by the way, what do you think is going to happen if Donald Trump tries to nationalize the National Guard and send them out, you know, declare martial law, grab the National Guard, and send them out in the streets of Chicago? Do you think they're going to go? And if he sends
I have a funny feeling a lot of governors and congressmen will get quite exercised about protecting their own power at that point.
Yeah, I mean, say whatever you want about our system and about the degradation of our institutions. And there's a lot that we can say about that. People don't trust the media. They don't trust the government. They barely trust any of our major institutions. But we do have a legal structure that still works, that more or less everybody respects. And the idea that Donald Trump will somehow turn Adolf Hitler and that everybody will just automatically obey his orders and that the government will just knuckle under to him does not seem like a realistic fear to me. I'm sure there'll be a lot of mean tweets, and I'm sure if he gets reelected, he'll say a lot of things that people dislike. But at the end of the day, what is he actually going to be able to do? And by the way, what is he actually inclined to do? Look at how he handled COVID. He basically did everything that Drs. Fauci and Birx told him to do.
Yep.
I mean, heck, he gave Fauci a commendation on his way out the door. So he's the one who imposed the shutdowns. And by the way, when Brian Kemp said, yeah, we're not going to do that anymore, we're going to reopen Georgia, he was first on TV saying, bad an idea it was. And by the way, I'm the president. I have the authority to issue these lockdowns. Questionable, by the way. And Governor Kemp said, yeah, we're going to do it anyway. And he opened the state up, which, by the way, followed fairly quickly by Ron DeSantis in Florida. Well, Donald Trump was arguing, we have to do what Dr. Fauci says. So when the chips are down, Donald Trump seems to step away from the brink, or certainly in his first term, every single time. So I can't help but think that all of these fears about the Insurrection Act and about the military having to, you know, learn about lawful orders and unlawful orders and all, I still think our institutions are strong enough to prevent a president who decided to do that, become Adolf Hitler and suspend all civil liberties. I just don't think they would get away with it. Not yet.
Yeah, I can't think of really ever. I mean, because it is made up of the American people. And the American people have a pretty damn good idea of what they think about the federal government. And it's not fond.
I mean, look, my personal opinion is, based on everything I've seen, and we'll know a lot more by March, but based on, assuming the polls are right, Donald Trump is going to be the Republican nominee. And Joe Biden, who is, by the way, working to ensure that, I think we talked about it last week, four states are now pushing to ensure that only Joe Biden appears on the Democratic primary ballot. So no JFK Jr. or RFK Jr. Just him alone. We are pushing towards another Trump-Biden rematch. Now mm-hmm. that we've had 4 years of Biden, I honestly don't know if Trump will win or not.
He's certainly in a better position to win with the fresh mess left by Biden. And it wasn't that long ago. People can remember things being a lot better, like 180 degrees better. So he does have that going for him.
I mean, there has to be a sense that, you know, 3 years ago, gas was under $3. We could go buy groceries. Yeah, things were bad because, well, actually you have to go back 4 years because COVID destroyed everything. And look, honestly, yeah. the policies that Trump implemented during COVID, I suspect did not help his political campaign in 2020. There were a lot of people who were upset about the way COVID was handled, about shutting down the economy, losing their jobs, millions of people out of work. 2 weeks to slow the spread turned into, what, 6 or 8 months? And so
a couple of years for some places.
So Joe Biden kind of ran on, I'm the normal guy. I'm the guy that's been around. I've been largely inoffensive for 50 years. It'll be a return to norms. That was what he talked about. Norms. We'll have a return to norms. Well, now we've seen what a return to norms look like, and it doesn't look all that great.
Yeah, that was kind of one of the reasons was the norms. Is why there has been this big movement, you know, Tea Party and whatnot, culminating in this, rather grassroots populist movement. Is because the norms up in D.C. are not norms that people appreciate or like. We want the norms changed. We see that that's the norm. And we don't like the way you're just so accepting of, well, he's corrupt, but, you know, he's one of ours. So, you know, we'll let him go. I mean, we see what's going on. exempting yourselves from Obamacare. I mean, yeah, we get what the norms are and we don't like them.
Yeah, but whatever power that argument might have had is let's go back to normalcy. Let's go back to not just yelling at each other about everything. I mean, that was what Joe promised, right? It was a George W. H.W. Bush campaign. A thousand points of light, a kinder, gentler nation. And what we got was 25 to 50% inflation, depending on what basket of goods you're looking at. We got, well, as far as I can tell, we have edged ourselves towards World War III. This is not what we asked for. It's certainly what Washington wanted to give us, but it's not what we asked for. And so it's one thing to run against Donald Trump, who a lot of people don't like, and they don't like him personally. I get that. I happen to be one of those people. And so you look at Joe Biden. Now, of course, I despise Joe Biden. There is no, nothing could convince me to vote for Joe Biden under any circumstance. I've watched the guy for 40, 50 years, 40 years now, at least. I'm almost 60. So let's say 40 years. There is nothing about him that is admirable. There is nothing about him that you would want to emulate. And certainly he is not someone that you would want to be holding onto the wheels of power. So Joe Biden, non-starter for me. But I'm an outlier. I recognize that. For many people, Joe Biden was this inoffensive guy who's just always been around. And you can probably run against a, divisive and unpopular president and win if that is what people think you're going to deliver. The trouble is, Joe Biden now has a record. We now know what his presidency looks like. And so when you look at national polls, which granted are useless and don't tell us much, Trump and Joe Biden looks like a horse race.
Yeah, I mean, again, since he has a record now, and they each have, a set of 4 years that you can compare directly to one another, one followed the other. So, and actually, you can look back at Obama's reign as well, which is really what Biden did was an accelerated third term of Obama. Yeah, I mean, Trump looks pretty good in that comparison.
Yeah, so I don't know. My guess is that Donald Trump wins the nomination, although we don't know that yet. And by the way, if there's a surprise tomorrow, I think it tosses everything into a cocked hat. If Donald Trump does
Well,
not
what
win,
would be a surprise tomorrow?
DeSantis winning.
I don't think it'd be a huge surprise, though. He's the one,
I think for
touting what a great ground game he has there.
Most people, look, most people don't know anything about ground game. Most people don't even know what the Iowa caucuses are or how caucuses work or, how important it is to get people to, drive shuttle vans up to your house and shuttle you to the caucus and back and all this other logistics. People don't know that. What they know is when they look at a poll and they're casually scrolling through the headlines, on break at work, because they wouldn't do this during work hours. When they're on break at work and they see a, an NBC headline that says that, newest poll or Fox News, whatever it is that you watch, and you see the newest poll that says, Trump now is ahead, has 63% in Iowa. If the day after Iowa you see Trump gets 35%, DeSantis 38. That is shock.
Yeah, I guess it could be for some people. I think
I think
that
for most people.
if Trump finishes outside of the top two, that would be a bigger shock to me. That means that he's not as well placed as he should be. His campaign is not as thorough as it should be. And maybe it would also suggest to me that staying out of the debates was a bad idea. I'm on record already as saying I think it was a pretty smart move for him to stay out of the debates.
Yeah, Trump has nothing to win by going to any of these debates. Nothing at all.
So, I think he that was the right move. But if he ends up in like third place, which I have a hard time believing he would, but if he did, that's bad news for him. That's not good news. And I don't know if that's good news for the GOP. I would love it to see somebody other than Trump get the nomination, but I'm not sure how that's going to happen. It just seems like he's got too much of a groundswell of support, and it's contagious.
Yeah, assuming all these Rasmussen polls are right, sure.
Yeah.
Are they? I don't know. You know, we have
this. Yeah, we don't know.
Yeah, we have this perennial debate about whether the polls are good or whether they're not. Yeah. And I don't know that we can get into that debate again. We don't know. I have an innate distrust of polls, but, you know, they do turn out to be sometimes very close to the mark. I don't know. And we won't know till tomorrow. I think if Donald Trump comes in third, that's a disaster for his campaign.
For him, yes.
And I don't know if that's a recoverable disaster. Because when he now goes out and argues, well, I'm the one who, you know, is the only one that people want. More than half of Republicans support me. That may be true, but we'll have a better idea about whether or not that is true after tomorrow night. And if it turns out that it's not true in Iowa, then that makes it really hard to carry that argument going into the actual primaries that come up in another, you know, 2 weeks.
Right. Well, and the big one for, I always say, for GOP is South Carolina. And I can't imagine that Haley would back out before then. That's going to be her, you know, her swan song or her launching. It's going to be one or the other.
Having said all that, you know, there is at least a quarter, perhaps a third, perhaps even more of people who are just going to be on the Trump train and they're not getting on.
And only Trump, yeah.
And only Trump. So there is an only Trump electorate out there. So if Trump doesn't win, what does that presage for the general election? And I think the bad thing is that we're going into a general election with two presumptive nominees. And I think it's pretty fair to say that Joe Biden is going to be the nominee, definitely, for the Democratic Party. There's an excellent chance it'll be Donald Trump. What we're going to end up with is an election campaign, a general election campaign, where basically we're just dragging all kinds of skeletons out of the closet because both administrations have skeletons to drag out.
Yeah.
I think from a tactical...
Well, and especially if they're not going to debate each other. I mean, not that I think we get much out of presidential debates anymore anyway. But if they're not even going to get on the same stage together, it almost makes it like a virtual election or something.
Yeah, look, I don't think Joe Biden can debate. Not anymore. I just don't think he has the presence of mind to be able to handle himself in a public, unscripted debate. I mean, it's getting very iffy for him to have one-on-one interviews with friendly journalists. I think a debate is going to be awfully rough for him. And look, I think
I agree.
Against Joe Biden, I think Trump would want a debate.
Oh, yeah.
Because Donald
But Trump, only because he can slam him and make him look like a fool.
Yeah, exactly. Because Donald Trump is still sharp enough to be able to do that. He is, you know, right. 3 years younger than Joe Biden. So he still has the presence of mind that Joe Biden doesn't have to be able to pull that off. I think from a tactical point of view, it would be better to have a candidate who didn't have a bunch of baggage after having been president once.
Yes.
But look, Grover Cleveland.
But you don't go to the election with the president you may wish to have.
Yeah, you go to a war with the you go to an election with the nominee you have. And look, Grover Cleveland pulled it off.
Yeah,
it's possible Trump will again. I mean,
although Chester A. Arthur was considered pretty bad.
but how different is that from today? I mean. Joe Biden.
That's true.
And look, Joe Biden has a problem on his own side. Joe Biden has a problem on the left. You know, if we want to talk about if we want to talk about insurrection, let's talk about what happened at the White House last night, where a bunch of Palestinian protesters came out yelling, "Let's go, Brandon," pulling the anti-climbing fence and breaking it outside of the White House, trying to get in. They don't like Joe Biden either because of the whole Gaza situation and what's happening. And you can always tell when somebody doesn't know anything about the Mideast when they start talking about how we need to support Yemen. We're not supporting Yemen. Yemen actually has a government. Yemen isn't the problem. Yeah. It's the Houthis that are the problem. And they're in a rebellion.
Well, and the Iranians.
Yeah, and the Iranians, of course. But the Houthis are in a rebellion against the, well, as legitimate as any Middle Eastern government, is the legitimate government of Yemen. This is not a fight against Yemen. These are people Yemen is fighting.
Right.
In addition to us. There is just this rage against the Biden administration's policy, A, pro-Israel, which is the traditional American policy. And, I mean, obviously the Palestinians are largely bad people. And so are the people who support them. Hezbollah, the Iranians. These have not been constructive actors on the world stage for quite a long time.
Actually, quite the opposite.
Yeah, and they're the people who are being supported by those who presumably would normally vote for Joe Biden. Are they going to hold their nose and vote for Joe Biden now that they know what a Joe Biden presidency means? I don't know. Then there is what happens after the election. No matter who wins, do people accept that as the legitimate result of the election? I'm not sure that everyone will.
Well, they didn't accept it in 2000, 2004, or 2016. So I don't know why they'd accept it now.
Or 2020.
For the Republicans. So, yeah, I don't know why that would change.
In the 21st century, the only president that everybody generally conceded won the election fair and square is Barack Obama.
But only in 2008.
I don't know.
2012 had some funny business. That was when, Candy Crowley started arguing with the GOP nominee during a debate. When they covered for the whole 9/11 thing in Benghazi, when they covered up all the butter emails.
And, yes, well, that's just the national media's general.
Oh, and that was also when the IRS was going after the Tea Party grassroots voting machines. Denying them,
501(c) status,
any kind of status, and sending all these weird questions and asking for samples of their talking points and whatever. It was just so bizarre. So even that one's got a little bit of an asterisk next to it.
Yeah, but if you look at George W. Bush, if you look at Trump, mm-hmm. if you look at Biden, there is a general unwillingness, whoever loses, to accept the result of the election as legitimate. And there is always an accusation of voter fraud. If we've gotten to the point now where we don't even trust our elections, I'm not sure what the point of holding them is.
Well, and we don't trust those elections. And there are some people who don't want us to trust the elections. They do everything they can to make it a shady, opaque process, to just allow anybody to vote, whether they're allowed to or not, then claim that there's no such thing as
voter fraud. Yeah, whenever you can't, you know, we talked about this, I think, in 2018, during the midterm elections, whenever Chris and I went out here to vote in California. And there was all this elaborate security theater that we were subjected to. And it was like, oh no, we have to be sure that this is right. We have to be sure that that is right. And oh, you have to sign here to vote. At no point was I asked for an ID. No point was I positively identified. They handed me a log that says, hey, this says you live at this address. Why, yes, I do. Well, you have to sign here. You can't vote unless you
Yes, sir.
sign. All right, well, I guess I better sign then. Well, okay, now we can, I'm so glad you signed. Now we can give you your ballot, unknown stranger who just scrawled something in black ink on my ledger. Please go vote now. And that's not just in California. Think of all the states that have motor voter laws. So, and
Yeah, was it
California.
like Colorado and Washington, I think, send out automatically a voting package to every registered voter, whether they still live there or not, whether
Or
they're alive.
with motor voter, like in California, when you renew your driver's license, hey, you know what? We're gonna register you to vote because you have a driver's
Yeah,
license.
even if you're not allowed to vote.
By the way, yeah, you know who else gets driver's licenses in California? Illegal
Illegal
immigrants.
immigrants. Yep.
And the DMV doesn't know whether you're an immigrant or not, or a citizen, or
Right.
authorized to vote, and they don't have to. They just say, hey, you've got a driver's license. You ought to go vote. Again, we have
Yep.
all this elaborate security theater and no security. And every time a state like Georgia comes and says, okay, well, here's what we're going to do. We're going to tighten up on our election laws, and we are going to ensure that when you show up to vote, that you have to identify yourself. Well, that's just a return of Jim Crow.
Jim Crow 2.0.
Yeah, there are plenty of people in politics, most of them in the Democratic Party, who do not want any election security at all. And you, by the way, you see it just whenever there's some Secretary of State says, hey, you know what? I'm going to purge the voter rolls. Oh, no, you're not. We're going to
Yeah.
pretty trot into federal court and we're going to sue you for a violation of the Voting Rights Act of 1965. It's Greta Thunberg. How dare you? How dare you?
Well, it's actually part of the Voting Rights Act that we're supposed to purge the Secretaries of State are supposed to purge the voter rolls. So it's like, and I think most states have, an ongoing purge every so many years or every other year. Or I know that when Secretary of State offices in one state talk to another state about somebody who's moved, so they can verify that they are a resident, then they verify that to the old state, and the old state's supposed to take them off the voter rolls. Then I don't know if that always happens, but anything you can do to keep as many voters on the rolls as possible, but alive, dead, even better.
Yeah, but look, you know it's not going to happen for the most part because every time somebody does an audit of the voter rolls, look at what they did in Arizona, where they went through and said, okay, let's actually go. And by the way, it took a federal court battle just to allow them to do this. Let's just go look at some of these addresses and see if these people live there. And lo and behold, they didn't. And you always get these things where there are like 30 some voters at the same address. And you always get all the anecdotal stories of people who say, yeah, my dad died 2 years ago, but I got his voter packet. And technically it's illegal to vote, but does that mean people don't do it? I suspect not. There was a guy on X who's a poli sci professor up in New York. And somebody had said something about, with motor voter law and with all of these immigrants in there. And by the way, we count illegal immigrants for apportionment purposes for Congress, by the way. And there
That's
was,
new, though.
yeah, that is new. But they were saying basically to something to the effect of, well, look, your worries about, illegal immigrants or immigrants in general voting is just stupid because it would be against the law. And they would, you know, why would they risk being here in the United States and get caught voting? Why
Because you
would
never look for them, so they don't
they
get.
risk being in the United States if it's illegal to be here, you
Yeah,
moron? The fact that they're here in the first place gives us some indication as to the respect that they might have for federal law.
they clearly don't have an aversion to this risk.
But I mean, that's the argument it makes. And look, and some states, I believe New York City now allows illegal immigrants to vote in city elections. So what's the point of being a citizen again? And you think that, and by the way, just the sheer number of illegal immigrants that are coming in, you think that the MAGA movement is going to go away? No. It's here to stay. And here's the thing. The more you try to suppress it, the more, I don't want to say radical,
Louder.
but the more convinced they will be that the system needs to change. And so, like everything else they do in Washington, all this anti-Trump stuff is really kicking the can down the road of a problem that exists in Washington. And you can call it the deep state, you can call it whatever you want to, it undeniably exists. And Washington exists to basically solidify the privilege and position of a very small number of actors. And as long as that is true, the American people are going to get more and more upset. And that is complicated by the fact that the political polarization in this country is now just off the charts. And it's not just a political polarization between left and right. If you look at, well, look at the right and look at the vitriol and the invective that goes on between DeSantis and Trump people. And then go look at the left
Yeah.
and look at the vitriol that goes between, the pro-Palestinian people and the pro-Israel people. It's not that we are breaking into two ideological tribes. We are breaking into a multiplicity of ideological tribes, none of whom seem to share the same institutional concerns that, when I was younger, were broadly shared across the political spectrum.
Well, and there's also the problem that people aren't taught to share ideals. You have a certain set of ideals based on the color of your skin and your social economic status, and that's just it. You're either an oppressor or you're oppressed, and you can't do anything about that. So I don't have to share ideas. My ideas are right. Everybody else is just wrong. And when everybody thinks like that, there's no way to share anything. There's no way to have any common interest or common goals.
Yeah, well, this dividing Americans into groups and having what is turning into a group spoil system. I think earlier this week, I forget where it was, but it was I think it was Johns Hopkins Medical School. Their DEI official, their top DEI official, released a statement that says, "Well, if you belong to some groups, even if you don't know it, even if you're completely unaware of it, you have privilege. So if you're heterosexual, you're white, you're a man, you're a Christian, you're a conservative, you have a position of privilege that you don't deserve." And of course, Johns Hopkins was with public outcry, was forced to repudiate that, right? And of course, she had to come out and apologize. "Oh, well, this is inconsistent with our commitment to treat everybody the same." But of course, treating everybody the same is actually a sign of privilege in and of itself, according to the DEI
Yeah,
stuff.
exactly.
And by the way, the DEI stuff does get a little bit interesting. There was a story this week that came out, well, this week, the last couple of days, where people discovered something that was on the FAA's website. The FAA is, of course, wanting to hire a diverse workforce. And so part of their diverse workforce would be people with severe intellectual and psychiatric disabilities. And by the way, it's not something that's being hidden. It's something that's right on the FAA's website. If you go and you look in their diversity thing here, individuals with targeted disabilities. Here we go. This is it. Targeted disabilities. Hearing, vision, missing extremities, partial paralysis, complete paralysis, epilepsy, severe intellectual disability, psychiatric disability, and dwarfism for some reason, as another one. Okay. Severe intellectual disability and psychiatric disability. Look, if you're hiring somebody as a GS3 who is going to be mopping the floors at the FAA headquarters, if they have severe intellectual disability, that's probably not a bad thing. If you're hiring traffic controllers, hearing and vision disabilities, severe intellectual disability, that may be a problem.
And psychiatric disabilities for an air traffic controller, like one of the most high stress jobs available.
Yeah, well, of course the FAA hires, you know, more people than just air traffic controllers, obviously. But you know, there are some things that might just prevent you from having a job, no matter how compassionate the federal government might want to be towards you. But this whole DEI thing, I mean, it really is nothing more than just dividing Americans among different groups, some of whom happily get to reside in protected classes, while others do not. And I think it's interesting. I saw an interesting thing because it was coming up. We're coming up tomorrow on Martin Luther King Day, and someone wrote about
Jackson King Day. It's known here in Virginia.
Yeah, and some wag on X wrote about Claudine Gay. She was promoted because of the color of her skin, but fired because of the content of her character.
Yeah, I saw that. That was good.
Which is amusing, but the whole DEI movement is literally the opposite of what Martin Luther King was fighting for.
Yep.
And it never ceases to amaze me. People on the diversity side are now making arguments explicitly, in some cases, for racial segregation, using more or less the same arguments that were made by the segregationists of the 1950s.
Yeah. Well, what's that great video with one guy's the racist and one guy's the woke person, and they agree on everything about racism?
Oh, yeah. There's a YouTube video, the conservative and the racist and the liberal who are talking. Woke.
Yeah,
and the woke person, they're talking about race, and as it turns out, they agree on everything. You know, I tell you, it kind of reminds me, one of the few times in recent years that Saturday Night Live has actually hit the nail on the head, and actually it's not really all that quite recent because it takes us back to 2016, where...
With Dave Chappelle and the voters?
No, Dave Chappelle that was an interesting monologue, but I'm actually referring to a sketch that they did with Tom Hanks called Black Jeopardy.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
And Tom Hanks goes on there with his red Make America Great Again hat, and you know, they started talking about things like, you know, giving the government your name or allowing them to track you or whatever. And Tom Cruise was thinking, yeah, that's how they get you. And the best line on that was Tom Hanks came in and said that, and the moderator goes, yes, yes. The idea
And then, of
is,
course, it finishes with, and for final Jeopardy, do Black Lives Matter? It was nice knowing you, Doug. I got a lot to say on that. Yeah, I'll bet you do.
but what it points out, and it's something that I think that we so often forget, is that at the level of the actual citizen, the actual voter, these concerns for, DEI and concerns about MAGA and all of the other things, these are really all elite concerns. And if people at just the regular grassroots level talked to each other, and by the way, this does happen, they find that they have a lot more in common than they have in opposition. There
Oh,
is
yeah.
a concerted effort to prevent that from happening and to prevent these discussions from occurring. Because if they occur, at least in a small d democratic system, ultimately that will force ch political change, either peacefully through elections or semi-peacefully through protest. Speaking of Martin Luther King, one way of forcing change was through nonviolent non-cooperation. Or if we want to get dark, you just grab a rifle, go out in the hills, and start raising an army. No government that loses the support of people can maintain power indefinitely. It's never happened in history. It can never happen. Ultimately, the
Well,
people
and
have the
especially
power to
when
say
what
no.
the way the government's trying to do that is by controlling the culture. Breitbart was correct that politics is downstream from culture, and the government trying to step in into that middleman area, it just doesn't work. I mean, culture has to come from the ground up. And when you get shoved down your throat, it doesn't feel like culture. It feels like a cult.
Well, for people who remember what the culture was like previously, that may be true. But as we've discussed before, looking at some of these Harvard-Harris polls, you talk to people who are 20 years old and they have an entirely different view of what our culture is and is supposed to be than people who are, 30 and above. And you can do a lot of damage to the culture if you run an education system that is primarily designed to indoctrinate people rather than teach them. So we have an educational system that graduates, depending on how you want to measure it, 40% of high school graduates get out of high school, at least a quarter, get out of high school and they are functionally illiterate. Nearly half, I believe it's half, can only read at best at a fifth or sixth grade level. So
That's right.
you're not doing that, but you take any class of high school graduates, and I bet you will get 90% plus who know exactly what transgender is and who are much more tolerant of it than their parents are, let's say. So, you can force changes in cultures if you are willing to take over the institutions that largely education provide the cultural understanding that young people have.
There has to be a lot of erasing of history, and really control on all media,
Yeah,
which
but
is why
here.
is exactly what you see the left trying to do.
Yeah, but see, here's the thing. It doesn't even require. It doesn't even require that you lie about history. There are just things you don't teach anymore. For example,
Right.
you just don't teach civics courses anymore. Why
Right.
teach
Or
people?
Western history,
Yeah, why
or
teach?
Western civs.
Yeah, why teach people how the government works? Why teach people history? What you concentrate on is the massacre of African Americans in Oklahoma in the early part of the 20th century. You concentrate on slavery without getting too into detail on the Civil War, because that might cause people to ask questions. Why was there a war? You're selective about what you teach. But what you teach is the, you know, the Django Unchained version of history, which is dramatic and it is emotional, but it certainly lacks nuance. And that's really all you have to do. You can teach people things that are 100% true. You just ensure that you teach it without nuance.
Well, that's why some people say that the most important news that the media deals with is the stuff that it hides, that it doesn't even actually report on.
Yeah, it's the self-censorship of the media. For example, how many people are aware that farmers in Germany for the last week have been shutting down autobahns and dumping manure in government in front of government buildings because the Germans basically are just about to, for environmental concerns, obviously, and global warming concerns, are just about to shut down farming effectively in Germany. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look, you can find it. But is
the same thing was going on in the Netherlands just recently, too.
Yeah. I mean, if you look for it, you can find it. But we're not going to report it, you know, above the fold because, again, you know, what is it that Frank Fleming used to say? The art of reporting is covering stories that are important to the public with a pillow until they stop
with a
breathing.
Pillow until they stop moving.
Yeah. And that's largely... that's largely what we have.
I think that was Dave Burge, actually.
Yeah, occasionally something makes it through. For example, and I guess we'll close with this because we're coming up on an hour and 15 minutes at this point. Joe Biden just came out and said the U.S. does not support Taiwan independence. Well, why not just...
when did that happen?
The 13th was when it was originally reported.
That was Friday.
U.S. President Joe Biden said, said that the United States does not support the independence of Taiwan. This coming right after Taiwan elected a pro-independence president.
Right.
So we don't support independence.
Didn't Joe Biden go back? Have to go back on his words after he said, no, we totally would support Taiwan if they were attacked, which I know is sort of de facto policy, but it's not the written policy.
Yeah, the actual policy is to elide past that question as artfully as possible.
Right.
And primarily to make the Chinese communists wonder what it is that we might do.
And so we don't piss them off, so they'll keep trading with us.
Yeah, we have to walk this narrow line. We don't want to piss them off, but at the same time, we don't want to give them anything that they would interpret as a green light to invade Taiwan.
Right.
So,
well, unless you're Joe Biden, then hey, green light away.
You know, and I just don't understand why we are still pursuing Richard Nixon's Cold War policy vis-a-vis China.
Because it worked to a certain degree back when it was tried.
Yeah, right up until...
a lot has changed since then.
Yeah, right up until 1989.
Mm-hmm.
And in Tiananmen Square, we should have taken a step back and realized this regime is not changed enough from the glory years of Mao Zedong for us to be able to engage with it as a normal country.
Right.
And once the Soviet Union fell, I'm not entirely sure what our impetus was on treating China much differently than we treated the Soviet Union. China is not and has never been our friend. And it seems to me that the policies that we've pursued vis-a-vis China since 1989 have done nothing more than make the Communist Party stronger. And now we have in Xi Jinping essentially a reincarnation of Mao Zedong. Now,
yeah,
On the plus side, over the last couple of months, we have seen a massive purge of China's military leadership, largely because China's military appears to be ineffective. In their missile field, they found out that most of the doors on top of their intercontinental ballistic missiles would not open if they gave a command to fire. They have apparently the corruption is so bad that they are replacing their rocket fuel with just water so that the weight is fine, but there's no rocket fuel, and some people are actually using rocket fuel for fuel. There's somebody who was talking about they were
flash frying.
Yeah, and they're making hot pot with solid rocket fuel. I don't think China is as militarily impressive as they want everybody to think. And
yeah, I have no doubt.
By the way, we've already learned that about Russia.
Yeah.
Oh, and by the way, average age of a Russian KIA in Ukraine. You want to guess what that is?
32.
35.
Wow.
They have KIA.
I thought 32 was high.
Yeah, 32 is high. The average American death in Vietnam, the average age of the American soldier in Vietnam was 19. 32 to 35. And by the way, you may be right. It may not be 35 because now I'm second guessing myself because I don't have it right here in front of me. That tells you horrible stories about their demographics and their ability to recruit in their military. And by the way, they've got KIAs all the way up into their 50s. So that's not a good sign. And I'd be willing to bet that China is in the same position.
Very similar.
Everything looks great from the outside. I'm not entirely sure how effective their forces would be.
Maybe if there was a ground invasion of China, they could withstand it. I think they've got plenty of bodies, but I don't think they have a projection force.
Couldn't do it when the Japanese invaded.
That's true.
Now, obviously, it was a much poorer country. But,
yeah.
I mean, manpower was not China's problem in the 1930s. No. But they were singularly ineffective. I'm not entirely sure that, despite what Biden says, I'm still not entirely sure that China can invade Taiwan now. And I think in 10 years from now, it might pretty much be impossible.
That would be excellent. But that means that we have to keep arming Taiwan. And we should be doing a few more pass-throughs the South China Sea, I would imagine, too. Just kind of let them know we're there.
Yeah, just have an aircraft carrier hanging out in international waters. But the Chinese do appear to have fallen for their own propaganda. They do appear to think that, and by the way, this is what Xi says he wanted, and what Xi has been arguing for, is China needs to be a world-class military. I don't know if a totalitarian system can build a world-class military. The things that you need
to not a full military. I could see like a special forces or something like that.
Yeah, maybe, but the things that you need to make a world-class military means devolving decision-making capability down to the lowest level possible. Yeah, which means literally if your sergeant gets shot, some corporal can jump in and take his spot. And if your lieutenant gets shot, some sergeant can jump in and take his spot. And by the way, we can look at America's record in World War II, where in some battles we had casualty ratios that were so high that you literally had corporals running platoons. They just stepped up and they took over when their sergeants and their lieutenants got killed, and they maintained cohesion because America traditionally has concentrated on independence at the local level and pushing down decision-making to the lowest possible capability. That is a very, very dangerous concept in a totalitarian society.
Yeah, absolutely. Can't have anybody thinking for themselves.
You know, the Soviets treated tactical maps as military secrets, and no one under the rank of lieutenant was allowed to have a map in their possession. That does not bode well for a flexible and effective military. And look, you can look at how Russia's done in Ukraine. In a disaster, like all Russian military campaigns have been a disaster, even in World War II, Russia won simply by their ability to throw millions of men into a meat grinder. And look, numbers, as Stalin said, have a quality all of their own. But it sure is an expensive way of doing things. And so I think totalitarian countries have fairly weak militaries. By the way, the Germans, with as much training as they had, by 1943, when Adolf Hitler had pretty much taken control over the military and was just giving absolute unavoidable or undisobeyable directives to his generals, they pretty much lost control of the tactical situation on the battlefield. They were not allowed to make military decisions anymore. They were all being made by Adolf Hitler. Totalitarian countries are not good at this sort of thing. And so, yeah, it's just, but I mean, how Joe Biden is it just to come out and explicitly say, yeah, we don't support Taiwanese independence. Although, to his credit, that is technically America's policy.
Yeah, the unspoken policy that, well, we really do, but we don't officially.
Yeah, I mean, we don't recognize Taiwan as an independent country anymore, right? They have no diplomatic representation. We voted to toss them out of the UN in the 1970s under Nixon. And in the 1980s, whenever the Chinese started making, you know, unpleasant mouth noises about it, we sent their ambassador home. And we recalled the American ambassador. So we don't have any formal diplomatic ties with them. So we have, at least in one sense, cut them loose.
Mm-hmm.
But
we still have a lot of economic ties. And there are political ties as well. So we're not unknown there. They aren't unknown here.
No, but it's, you know, you just don't tell the... You just don't tell the Chinese that we don't support independence. You have to be very careful about those statements. And
yeah, that's not something you need to be announcing.
Yeah,
at all.
But Joe Biden does not have a responsibility for being careful, really, does he? Well, Michael, as always, pleasure to talk to you. We will look forward to talking to you again next week. We're out of time now, but thanks for being here, and I'll talk to you next week.
All right, see y'all.
You have been watching the Observations Podcast for Sunday, the 14th of January. I was about to say June, but it is January 2024. Thanks for watching. We'll look forward to talking to you again the next time. Until then, so long.